What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello and welcome to Imps Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Read the Social Suplex newsletter. Shout out to Trish and Tim as always, and to every person who's contributed so far. Issue number 11 came out recently after a short little hiatus, so go check that out. Trish with an absolutely amazing piece on Okada and Tanahashi, so 100% go and read that. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the AEW week that was. 30 minutes of ignoring the Warner Brothers and Netflix deal as we talk about the wrestling shows. The wrestling, you know, the wrestling. It's fair to take other places are going to be talking about that and covering it in quite some detail, but I'm just going to focus on the C2. I'm going to focus on that shit. I get to wimp out of it, yeah. That's why they call me Imp, because I wimp out of stuff nowadays. I'm sure the other places here on Social Suplex will be talking all about that stuff, so you get proper deep dives rather than me just doing like a quick little broad mentioning things. I did find myself on Netflix's website reading press releases and stuff. I wanted to be informed, but I wasn't looking at it because I wanted to talk about it on this show. I want to talk about Samoa Joe and Eddie Kingston. I want to talk about the C2 with Jon Moxley and Takeshita having an absolutely incredible main event. I want to talk about how Dynamite was from a place called Fishers, Indiana. I have literally never heard of Fishers, Indiana. Like, what, where fish are? What is this place? Obviously you've heard of Indiana, but Fishers, Indiana. But yes, C2 time continues, baby, so we'll jump straight to it. Well, you know what? Jump straight to it. Didn't open the show though, did it? And that's not the format of this. I always start off with whatever opened the show, and this week that was Samoa Joe and Eddie Kingston having a face-to-face. So you know what, let's have a little play of a clip from the segment, a little clip of the AEW champion having a little chinwag with his number one contender for winter is coming. So jump on over to whatever Fishers, Indiana is. Jump on over. I picture Fishers, Indiana as having like a fishing cannery, like on the beginning world of the Outer Worlds. That's how I picture it. I hear Fishers, Indiana, I'm picturing that starting planet with the guy with the hat. I didn't learn his name. The guy with the hat is just the whole corporate thing of selling, trying to get you to work at the fishing cannery. Yeah, that's what I'm picturing it is. Anyway, that's not what you wanted to hear when you came back. You wanted to hear about Samoa Joe, the champion of greatness, who had Eddie surprised when he saw the man who had one of the greatest title reigns in the history of the independents, now out here talking about jets and things of expense, and Eddie Kingston just being like, I do not recognize this man. Unsurprisingly, Kingston talking shit for a couple of minutes was absolute gold. You're doing what the old school guys used to do, like guys that you used to hate, the guys that you used to call out. Like, it's funny, now you're them. Eddie wants the fighting spirit Ring of Honor champion who used to motivate him back in the day, the man who did battle with his Kobashi idol. He doesn't want this as gestures to Man of Riches. And this bubbled into a segment later on with the Ops versus the Dark Order. Hook, Hobbs and Shibata were backstage to chit-chat, purposely doing this as a message to hangers. Then a little segment with Paige and his long-term friends. Given the last segment they had on telly, he was a baddie and he beat their asses pillar to post. Whatever you do, please don't ruin this for us. With Paige agreeing, saying it's the least that he can do. But to call them long-term friends. Sure, they were friends a long time ago, but within this past year, he's not been very much friends to them. He's been the polar opposite. Hangers has not been long-term event with the Dark Order for a little while, but it was an excuse for a match. So the match started with the Ops jumping right at the bat, running inside with Shibata directing the flow. More for Hook, not that Hobbs needed any direction in how to throw Alex Reynolds about. Evil Uno had a charging flow after the break, but the second Big William walked in, that was over. Silver Reynolds held in chokes at the ropes as Hobbs hit the spinebuster on Uno for the win. His promise not to interfere fulfilled. Hangman Page then came on out through the crowd. Hook immediately legged it out of there. Hobbs accidentally knocked down Shibata, but no buckshot with security running on out to hold hangers away. Not just dojo jobbers now for the Ops, but also security jobbers for Hangman to buckshot. No swerve tonight, just one angry Hangman. After the break, wait a minute, I know that garage door. This was filmed last week. Hangman all shouty angry at the Ops, challenged Hobbs and Shibata to a tag next week. It somewhat flowed into a swerve segment on Collision, and an Eddie Kingston promo also on Collision, so we'll hint on that a little bit. But this is, I talked about this before, where it's just nice to have a little bubbling rivalry. You build to your title match, what have I done? Like, Eddie Kingston's done this before. One of my absolute favourite rivalries in AEW was Eddie Kingston versus CM Punk. It lasted about 3 weeks, and that's what I needed. Did did not need that stretched out at all. It got heated, it bubbled up, it had its amazing match at the show, then we just move on. Sometimes it's absolutely fine to do that. It feels like Eddie Kingston is way too strongly entwined with his character and his story to be moving on from the Ops once he's had his title match. It almost absolutely screams that Hook is going to cost him. I would kind of like something bigger than that, something just a little bit more different than that, like, his former protege is a man to cost him, because Hook has just cost Hangman. I think I'd like something a little bit more. But if you are building stuff, Hangers, Swerve, Kingston, that's quite a trio. That is quite a trio. And onto the backstage bits, there's quite a few this week. Mark Briscoe gave out the challenge to Denry Garcia for a TNT Championship match in Wales, so winter is coming. We got more Briscoe in our backstage conglomeration jabber about Orange Cassidy versus Roderick Strong on Collision. Conglomeration rules? No chops. We'll see how that goes. And this is where we've got to talk about Darby Allin. Legit hospitalised after his match with Kevin Knight. Here we got a video of him in the hospital bed trying to get like feeling back in his fingers, and we found out more on Collision, where he was replaced by Jack Perry, officially announced as no longer part of the tournament, cut an angry roof promo. I think as well, talk about the promo itself when we talk about Collision. Yes, he has been fully replaced, and now Jack Perry's in there. They've got a similarity in that they are two recently returned lads trying to build up a bit of momentum. Darby Allin, though, is having so much hot fire really put behind him to really elevate him and pump him up as somebody who could be a like potential ace for the company over these next few years. Whilst Jack Perry, his heel run called him quite a lot. It felt like the Jungle Express thing is working. It definitely is working. It felt like, again, it was like a way more natural role for him to fall into. Felt so much of a better fit for him immediately. But it's going to take time just to heat him back up again. Like, all that support behind him isn't quite there yet. Which it's going to be difficult to get a replacement in this as strong in terms of crowd support as Darby Allin. So I feel like whoever they chose was always going to just be like a step back. But it sucks, no. A legit injury. After all of the pearl clutching to do with every other thing that he's done, with crashing through the glass and cutting his back up with the whole fire stuff and whatever, the thing that actually got Darby Allin was a dropkick. That's what rocked him. That's what ended up breaking him in the end. But anyway, he cut his promo on Collision. We'll get to that when we get to Collision. Ricochet, he's gone viral in every company he's worked for, but he's really known for his charity, his humanitarianism. That's why he'll be making his Ring of Honor debut, defending his national championship against Dalton Castle, which he did, and we also got a defense on Collision against Ace Austin. Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron, babes of wrath, they got a wee talkie to camera over video clips of their time together. Sure, they addressed wanting to win the tournament, but a lot about how much they've enjoyed tagging together. Triangle of Madness. How can you call yourself Stat Daddy when you're nothing but a little bitch? Exquisitely put in Tekla's Austrian accent. Then we had Chris Statland and Jamie Hayter, who immediately became a meme in the way they were dressed, of Dune from the 80s, Dune from today. Just like such an instant, whoever came up with that, just yes, that's exactly what that vibe is. Stat and Hayter have enemies in common, but once that's dealt with, they could maybe have a quick wah-wah wrestle. Mercedes Moné, in her first Hello since Full Gear, was set to defend her Ring of Honor TV Championship against Red Velvet at Ring of Honor Final Battle on Friday. Not at all rocked by losing to Stat, nah, still the ego-driven Icon Ultimo. And FTR got their jabber too, Stokely calling their Bang Bang Gang's motivation pathetic. Cash with, you two were always just going to be Billy's boy and Mr. Storm. Dax all passionate about the legacy they've created, when Austin Gunn is only here because of his dad. That also set up a segment on Collision. Right, and into the Continental Classic, with Wednesday reserved for Gold League, and Collision set for the Blue League. But here was a Goldie, Pac versus Kazuchika Okada. Talk about a hot start to a show. Bloody hell, this opened the show. This was the first like match of the show. Like, Jesus Christ, what a match. Gold League bringing the hot pairings and baddie dancers right out the gate. The lightning flash once we returned from ad break was so fun to watch yet again. Pac with his snappy offense makes such a perfect setup for the sudden Okada dropkick. The greatest tournament wrestler finally got his momentum underway though. Pac poised to lock in the brutalizer after his rope running charred lariat grounded him. Okada locked the head and hooked the legs for a quick pinfall. Written all over the Rainmaker's face that he knew full well just how lucky he was. He just escaped through that one. But I love that you can do that in a tournament one. Okada has already fallen to something similar with Fletcher, and here he's only just survived. I just love the idea of all these competitors knowing just how dangerous finishers are. So finishers end up not hitting, and you end up getting like quick roll-up wins. Or somebody just hits like a big oomph and they just immediately go for it like, I'm not even risking it. Which is aided by the 20-minute time limit, like they can't mess about. It just works. It's a format that really works. Banning everybody from ringside, and the 20 minutes is something that's really made this tournament format work for television. And continuing with the Gold League, Kyle Fletcher versus Kevin Knight. Bloody hell, the hits just keep coming with this block, don't they? Full Aussie dickhead mode from Fletcher. Such a great character base for Kevin Knight to show. He's absolutely grand to give equal disrespect to a lad who's being a knob. And Knight's springboard forearm is just simply sublime. No elevated ramp this week. Still got the awesome camera angle from behind Fletcher as the man flew for the ad break amping. High kicks from Kyle, hell of a dropkick from Kevin. The two young lads earned the Knight's first This Is Awesome chant. Every big move Fletcher hit had to be fought for. The high kick in the corner had to be set up with a power up to lawn dart a bastard. Then immediately no brainbuster as Knight slipped out to the apron and showed that his springboard leap looks just as amazing when hit on a lad in the ring. And then Kyle took an inside out head bump on the apron off a pendulum DDT. Coast to coast got a holy shit and a great set set up for Carl to get the knees up for the UFO. Fully played off the closing flow of the Knight Allen match last week. And Jesus, the final flash couple of minutes with just hitters, big hitters and quick roll-ups. The crowd on their feet as the lad just kept kicking out. That high kick in the end was just hit with a sprinting pace with a big brain buster for the win. Hell of a match. Hell of a match. Don Callis up in the ring afterwards, chatting shit through the ad break as Hechicero and Josh Alexander strolled on out with their bags of money. Callis addressed the Young Bucks. He can forgive murder, but he can't forgive siding with Kenny Omega. I've got your money, and I know Kenny's not going to be financing you. Matt and Nick out to superkick, BTE triggered to Fletcher, clearing the ring and snatching their bag of money, which brought out the money man, Kazuchika Okada with the Rainmaker, full beat down on the Bucks as the fans chanted for Kenny, and instead got a man and his dinosaur. All happy as Perry rope walked into a moonsault. Old allies Kazu and Jack stared down, middle finger, and Perry just bit it and had to be jumped by evil hologram. Matt and Nick both held for Don Callis to beat them up. Punches to Matt's temple, then went to hilariously evilly gouge the eyes of Nick as Kenny Omega's music hit. Omega's save swung into a wee dance with Okada. No V-trigger, but the goodies got to stand tall in the ring. Later in the show, Renee interviewed Callis, Okada and Fletcher. Kazu blamed Takeshita, but this is more used for Don to explain and to make the situation with the International Championship not being on the line in this Continental Championship make sense. When you need a kind of lengthy backstage segment to explain the unified, not unified title situation, this is where you question if things are unnecessarily complicated. The fact you even need to do this and go, guys, this isn't difficult, this is the situation, surely that means that you've overcomplicated it. Like, just immediately, fans just being like, I don't get why, it's just, we're not just using the one title now, what's this temporary unification bullshit? It felt like, from at least from my side, from the people I was seeing and the people I interact with, it felt more like it wasn't them not understanding what was going on. It felt more like, but why are we doing it this way? This has been to address, I guess, that side that were questioning what was going on. I'm assuming they were there. I know Twitter exists full of morons. Me just outwardly insulting the AEW viewers. But you know, you've got a wide audience. You've got a wide intelligence base. Like, you don't know who's going to be watching. You don't know how old they are. It could be a kid. Like, you're allowed to be dumb if you're a kid. But yeah, the second you have to do a segment like this to explain the situation, and it's quite a long segment as he explains it. That's the second. Like, yes, you did quite a good job of explaining it, but you did have to explain it. Surely that answers the question. And onto the main event, we got double John Moxley this week. I'm assuming because of the Darby Allin injury. But here we got John Moxley versus Claudio Castagnoli. Rene in the crowd during Mox's entrance gave us some last second context to fighting competitive nature of the tournament match we were about to see. A respectful sparring at the start, like friends having a ground tussle, making the point to show Mox losing the technical battle to Claudio. But it was also Super Swiss who giant swung his Death Rider leader into the side of a vertical standing steps. That was all the excuse Mox needed to bleed a fair bit of the head blood. Claudio continued to get the better of his stablemate. Mox's running knee caught into 8 rotations of the giant swing and sharpshooter, forcing Mox into going for snap offense like the cutter, roll-ups, a quick dive through the ropes, as that head blood continued to pour. Both down for the 10-minute call from Justin Roberts. That seemed to ignite Mox into some form of actual flow. Stomp near fall, and then the chokehead Claudio hoisting the lad out of the ring. The ringside brawl gave us a funny Castagnoli bunny hop thing. I assume he was going for a leaping double foot stomp, but didn't quite nail it, and instead just hopped at the man and stumbled at the barricade. Just pose your muscles afterwards and go, just, like he meant it. Grr. Back in the ring, Desperate John fought through. He may be on a bad run, but he was the champion for a long time for a reason. Death Rider grabbed Claudio, a slow rise from Mox, 5 minutes remain, and an instant running uppercut snapped in, 1-2-3. The win snapped in out of nowhere. Commentary openly chatting about, what does this mean for Mox? What does this mean for the Death Riders? But I loved it, because with that 5 minutes remain comes a final amping. Okay, here we go. This is the final portion of the match, and the Castagnoli just off of that hype, just immediately charged in and finished it. I thought that was a great finish. Using the time call to actually feed into your own momentum, really well done. I think this was a really solid show for the Continental Classic. I think I said last week that I enjoyed the matches, but there were quite a few that didn't have a lot to say. Whilst this week I was like, I don't always do a lot of recapping of the actual content of the matches. Immediately watching this week, I'm like, oh, but that is the core of the tournament. I do actually need to say what's happening here, as this stuff is going to come back. These little reversals, these different things, the way that the wrestlers are in these tournament matches, their opponents further down the line are going to learn from all this stuff. So, you know, recapping it now so that later on it'll all come back. I've watched enough G1 climaxes to see how the story arcs build throughout the tournaments. This week was a really strong week for the Classic. It becomes a thing with the G1 climax where you just kind of pick and choose matches as the tournament goes on. Obviously, this is under a TV show format, so it's a little bit more concentrated, way easier to digest and actually get through. But if you are struggling for time, but you want to check out the Classic, unfortunately, I do think you have to watch all the matches this week. They were really good. Don't think there's a dud amongst them. Maybe the closest being Roderick Strong, Orange Cassidy, but that's because it's like an interstable babyface kind of match, so it's different from the others, but it was still really good. I think I do recommend all 6 matches this week. tweet. So huge shout out to John Moxley as well. We ended up pulling double duty. Every time something goes awry, he is just right there being like, no, I'll do it, I'll fill in. He was even on commentary for the Ring of Honor 0 Hour for their pay-per-view. Like, there. Shout out to Mox, the MVP of the week. I mean, Mercedes also had an amazing week as well. But yeah, shout out to Mox. The social suplex confirmed best wrestler in AEW with no contention whatsoever. We went through the official format. The opinions of me, Sam and Floyd are obviously then concrete. They can't be moved. They can't be shifted. He's the number one. He's the best. Anyway, let's move on into holiday spirits. It's Christmas time. It's the Hardcore Holiday Deathmatch. Women's Tag Team Tournament semi-final. Timeless Love Bombs versus Megan Bain and Marina Shafir. It's the most wonderful time of the year. The present of plunder. Ah, yes, I've been watching AEW. I don't get much of these. Any no DQ match in WWE is just a plunder match. Whilst with AEW, like, when we get no DQ matches, they're often quite violent. So just get one that's just fun nonsense. Felt like we got one in the ECW arena, but been a while since we just got a straight up plunder. No messing about, immediate brawl and outside to smash a bottle over the head of one lass before grinding the remnants into the forehead of the other. Tony Storm, everybody. As I pleaded for last week, gimmicky Christmas stuff, but violent. We didn't get a Christmas tree. we didn't get Christmas tree swung at each other. We didn't get a mystery present smashed over the head and then it's revealed what it is when it gets smashed. We didn't get any of that. But we did get a candy cane wrapped in barbed wire. Javier and Bane had their moments too. The latter with a 619 tiger feint thing, but caught Tony's head instead of a kick and just drove it into the apron. I thought that was a great spot. Then Megan Bane just launched a woman, throwing Shirakawa out onto Storm. Back from the break into a rope-tied rib striking, but Shafir did it with a frying pan. Bane was equipped with a chair, but to make it Christmas, said chair was golden. Oh, unless it was feeding into her Greek goddess thing. That makes more sense, but I prefer it because it was Christmas. I prefer a world where Megan Bane's just like really into Christmas. Like really, really into Christmas. I live in a world where you have to give everybody quirks. And it's like, yeah, Mox has got his quirks, but I just love the idea. Give every villain a quirk. Megan Bane's, she just really loves Christmas. Just really flipping loves Christmas. To an aggressive level, because she's a baddie. Ringside table with Christmas lights, pile driver through it. Judo throw to Mother's Milk Mina, like what we did in the Blood and Guts. Speaking of, the pole cue, like what Statlander snapped in with, was thrown in by Tony to help her love stab Marina in the forehead. A certainly unique submission escape. Slingblade off the top onto the chair, but a breakup as we still had a Christmas-wrapped table propped in the corner to go through. And Jesus did a last go through it. Mina groggy and speared like dead weight onto the thing. A proper painful-looking bump off the head onto the wood. Another unique spot with the slam into Mother's Milk Tease, but instead got a Storm Zero to Bane sat down onto Shafir's stomach. Honestly, looked comfy. You gotta hit that move with a bony butt. Like, I'm sorry. Gotta be hitting that with a much bonier butt. When a man dressed as Santa strolled on down, not a hidden Death Rider, but Luther making his return with the gift of a shoe for Shafir. Tax on the mat from Tony 2, shoe to the head, roll up, 1, 2, 3. A fun bit of plunder, a big pop for Luther's return. Just a bit of holiday Christmas fun. This is absolutely fine, but also, it is the semi-final of a tournament match. And within all of that, I kind of forget it was the semi-final of a tournament match. Luckily, we've got Collision to remind me of that fact. Just have a bit more of a calmer sit down and have the characters just talk to each other about what this means. About finding these first champions at Winter is Coming. That was much needed. This was just such a fun tag team match. I did kind of forget about what was on the line. Which could have been a me thing, but I felt like the plunder did somewhat take away the focus from what was on the line during it. So, you know, on a show I had fun, so I wasn't complaining yet. I'm literally only realising now. Literally right now in this moment, it's like, oh yeah, I did have a great time, but did it come at a cost? What cost? Anyway, that was Dynamite. I feel like in this period, the quality of the C2 matches is going to decide whether these shows were great or not. I've already spoiled my review for Collision, I guess, but I'll be saying I think I have to recommend all 6 Continental Classic matches because they were all great. So let's jump on over to Collision. We left the fishing place and ended up in Columbus, Ohio. That one I know. That one I've heard of. And we jump straight into the Continental Classic matches that happened on Collision. A Blue League show starting with Orange Cassidy versus Roderick Strong for some conglomeration fun times. So let's jump on over, because you know, Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong, they are just such good friends. Such good friends. I'm absolutely sure that everything will be absolutely fine because they're such good buds, like in the conglomeration together. They're great friends. So let's play a sound clip of some good friends having some good fun.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
In the middle, Obi's got cool. Orange punch caught. Oh, and a hurting block. It's Cassidy with a chop. 2, and it's Cassidy.
The voice of Renee Paquette essentially told us Cassidy has a bad back, whilst Roddy has already promised that he'll be targeting said back, so that's unfortunate. But was Sloth Style able to trick away that inevitability? Well, no. Otherwise, I wouldn't have described it as inevitable. Orange had a tad of a headlock fun, but when the action spilled to ringside, that back was hoisted and dropped right onto the barricade. Then a chop, how dare he, before rolling the man into the ring, with Cassidy asking Ref Bryce, tell him to stop, given the no chops conglomeration rule, which isn't an AEW rule, so Bryce can't really enforce that in a tournament setting. Cassidy's not really thought it through. Eventually, Orange found his momentum, dived to the outside, even managed to fend off Strong's corner stopping. Got caught on the dive, but you know, Sloth Style isn't that thought through. Suplex was Stone Dog countered, which was Uenagi reversed, which got crucifix rolled in such a great quick little sequence. That was so good. They may not be best friends, but they are in the same faction and know each other's offense pretty well. Strong somehow managed to do a dick kick fall, but onto the second rope. I feel like impressive spots just need to be called out. You know, such great technical ability. I've never seen that spot before. I mean, I'm not sure he meant it. But still. Anyway, end of heartache had commentary sure this was over, but instead afterwards Cassidy went into a flow of countering everything his stablemate threw at him. Counters galore, but the Stundog Millionaire eventually did, well, stun. Those dodgers still kept coming. Orange punch, nah. End of heartache, nay. Legs caught and shoulders chucked for a pinfall win for Orange Cassidy. Which is in a tournament setting, we have them go back and forth like this, and finishes don't happen because they're so desperate to not be caught by them. You'd end up with loads of roll-ups and quick pinfalls. And I love it, because you still feel like a finisher could just end something. Or like the Claudio match where it could just be a big impactful move. There's plenty of examples this week of really great ways to finish these matches in a tournament setting. Making finishes still feel strong, but also feeling like these matches could be caught at any moment with any snap offense. And let's stick with the Blue League before I get too excited and carried away. Claudio Castagnoli versus Mascara Dorada. I've already praised Claudio as the best base for the athletic spinny boys. The CMLL world champion fully in his element against Dorada. Like, hey, there's a reason CMLL crowned him specifically. And things did fly the second Mascara started rotating around the tall Swiss man after the break. His offense looking so damn good when Castagnoli's the one getting whipped by those arm drags. Not that Claudio's the one deserving all of the praise. Mascara too able to make the bigger bold man's slams and thumpers land and ground with such great oomph. Up in the corner, such a flashy spin into the head scissors, and the lad landed on his feet. A lovely surprise as he then followed up with a shooting star and scored the three. Great sell from Claudio afterwards, as he just sat there a bit grumpy on the apron. Less like a wrestling baddie wanting to jump, more unable to figure out how that just happened. He's not Moxley. He's not going to have a blow up. He's not going to be storming around ringside throwing stuff. I mean, we've seen Claudio have that before. But right now, here in this moment, he's like, technically, how did that happen? Like in an actual wrestling, in a wrestling figuring outy way. How did that actually happen? I like that. I like that as a response. And the main event, also of the Blue League, John Moxley versus Konosuke Takeshita. Oh, bloody hell. This was a match and a half. Not the greatest of opponents to be drawn against after just losing to your stablemate. Mox was forced into a situation of trying to bring the fight back on track against a heavy tournament favourite in the IWGP World Champion. Leg focus from Takeshita, knowing full well of the Death Rider's submission vulnerability, but man, I loved those moments of that fight being displayed. Konosuke popping up after the suplex, then Mox amping to do the same into dual lariats that grounded them both. Then when they were both back up, just trading fists and building into one stiff as fuck rope rebound lariat from Moxley. Oh, so darn good at showing us the lads taking the fight further and flying with bigger risks. I'm assuming the next idea was to amp up into an announce desk Blue Thunderbomb, but the second Takeshita touched the thing, it just collapsed into pieces. Well, no worries, just Blue Thunderbomb a bastard into those pieces. Great save. Still looked amazing. Obviously wasn't the big breaking table spot you wanted, but it still worked into us believing Moxley had to then crawl back for a 10 count. Mox back into the ring just in time, and such a great low angle ring level shot as Big Takeshita flew to meet him with a frog splash. Mox's only way out to dodge a follow up knee was to play possum. The final few minutes after that was so damn good too. Mox knackering himself to match Takeshita's charge, hitting hard to ground the man, but it was never enough. Limping as he ran through the pain to hit hard, until the legs gave out. Determined, but not smart, which was displayed so well when Takeshita's hard knee grounded him, but he was too stubborn to die. Another knee and raging fire did secure the win though, but bloody hell, what a fantastic match. Well, if I'm going to recommend one, it's this one. It's Moxley versus Takeshita. But I thought all six matches were so strong. Just watch them all. I know that's not if you're short for time and you're trying to figure out which one you want to watch. That's not what you want to hear. It's like all six of them? Yes, all six of them. A really strong week for the Continental Classic, which means I leave this week feeling very, very positive and I'm glowing about it all because in this C2 era, the shows kind of live and die by these C2 matches and bloody hell do they live. They thrive this week. Let's switch to the opposite of that by doing the other bits and starting with Darby Allin. Absolutely not thriving this second. Announced as officially out of the tournament, replaced by Jack Perry. And this was where we got the man giving a wee, quick, angry, sweary roof promo, saying that he felt his legs go out from him. Feels like a case of doctors saving Darby from Darby, but he doesn't know what this means for him. So a lot of energy with no clear place to direct it. Even at one point dropping to the floor, hitting some push-ups, helps, and then standing up being like, all amped and ready to just throw energy somewhere, but it doesn't. There's a lot of angry energy. He's got nowhere to really obviously direct it to, which is understandable. So yeah, wish the man a speedy recovery. Obviously this sucks, but also out of all the things that Darby Allin does, a dropkick is what's ended up rocking him. Tony Schiavone was sat down with the women's tag team tournament finalists. Let's raise a glass to four bitches with the itches who fight for all the riches. Tony's words hitting on the fact that they're a tag team outside of this tournament, not just thrown together to fill a spot. Willow doesn't see the issue with it. It's not like her and Harley were never in the ring together before this, bringing up they've known each other for 2 years after wrestling on Dark way back when. And I found the end hilarious, filmed whilst the crew were setting up production in the background, so the sound had to be brought right down to zero whenever someone wasn't talking, resulting in the five drinking in absolute silence, in a sound vacuum, just lifting it up. I personally found that quite fun. Just no sound, no ambiance, no nothing. In space, no one can hear you drink. Big rule of filmmaking, always be in control of your environment. Now your editor's spending time trying to rush a fix when he's got tons of other shit to be doing. It's like, could you find a way to not make this not sound as good? Like, did you record any audio of like no one talking just existing in that space? Which obviously would be difficult given there was production crew putting up a whole setup behind you. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's literally just a little thing that made me laugh. Eddie Kingston caught casually amongst staging racks and red lighting a two-camera promo making his motivation clear ahead of his title match with Joe. You were supposed to lead, but now you're doing what you hate. He's doing this so he can show the younger guys, do it the right way, do it the way AEW was supposed to be. Really amped up, just directing the motivation that was set up on Wednesday really, really well into Winter is Coming. And finally, the Triangle of Madness beat some women in pink gear up, then beat up some more women in green gear. Sisters of Sin spoke in tandem, and then see you in Cardiff, bitches, from Tekla. I'm always a fan of the Triangle of Madness backstage bits, but the second Tekla says something, I'm all fine with it. Like, if it's just the spooky girls, if the spooky gals are the only two that say a bit, I'm just like, I don't know how I feel about this speaking in tandem thing, it's just a bit weird. But then Tekla jumps in afterwards, and we're like, fuck you, and just runs away. Oh, I love it. I just love that energy so much. FTR and Dawson Cash out for the greatest night of Stokely's life, because FTR are the World Tag Team Champions. Immediately got shut the fuck up chants from just one sentence. The backstage dare was made on Dynamite. Now FTR were out in the ring doing it whilst acting all tough. And the Farsi Trumpets played for the Bang Bang lads to come on out. Dax with a passionate dare to touch the belts, but it was Austin who had the best line. I'm the son of a Hall of Famer. Juice is the son of a carpenter. Cash is the son of his cousin. And Dax is just a son of a bitch. Promising that they got turned on by contracts being signed. It's like, okay. They were determined to keep this sexual, but it didn't quite toe the line perfectly. I mean, speaking of it not being quite right, the next line from Juice plugged awshop.com, but his lines were just a bit wordy. I've already got a belt and it's holding my pants up, so I don't need any more belts. This isn't about us touching your belts, it's about us beating your ass when we meet in the United Kingdom. I'm like, gotta be a better flow for way to say that. It just seemed a little bit meandering, then we got back on point. It's like, hey, he got through it, but fair to say the mouth feel good score was rather low. As soon as I tried to say that out loud, you'd be like, oh, if this was pre-recorded, you could have workshopped that. But nope, in front of a live crowd. Swerve Strickland got his first words since his full gear return, with a lengthy entrance and black leather jacket of a star. He's very much back with his sights on the AEW Championship. And will you look at that? Samojo's champion again. And who was the one who ended his first reign? Huge pop for me for the Dynasty Warriors line, throwing all these Ops Dojo people for me to fight through like it's Dynasty Warriors or something. Very much a video game I played for hours as a kid. Shout out to my dual-wielding main Dian Wei. Oh, wait, no. I played more as Machao, I think, or Pang Tong, who I believe for years was being depicted as a black man. So look at it now being like, what, in the Chinese Empire game? I was a kid. Like, hell, my brother wants the DLC for the new one for his birthday. It's fair to say there's people in my family very much still addicted to it. Like, fuck, my other brother owns a copy of the Three Kingdoms because of it, and has a little Guan Yu and Zhang Fei figure things. Anyway, distracted. Swerve mentioned Dynasty Warriors. Just had a sudden, like, nerd out moment. A line which I have seen quoted already because it just hits so well. Same dance, different circumstance. Promising Joe will fall again. Then directed his jabber to Hangman Adam Page, making the offer official to be his desperado and back him up in the Winter is Coming tag. Josh Alexander interrupted for some reason with the enough baddie promo. This is Don Callis's house now. But the thing that did work was when he ripped into the Ohio crowd for being freaks and furries, and they just booed like crazy. I did notice there were a lot of people in outfits, specifically in this crowd, like more than your normal quota. But Josh Alexander ripping into the person who's dressed as Harley Quinn just on the front row, just fully ripping into her. This is why I'm not wrestling in Ohio. I loved it. I thought that was great. The man jabbered on a lot longer than I expected, hyped up into eventually announcing a match between them in Cardiff. The reason for the kind of random Alexander was revealed, with Shibata jumping with a simple swift kick to the back of the leg that grounded Swerve. A little opening for the Ops, with a little deal maybe with the Don Callie's family. And we end with a couple of title matches. The first, the TBS Championship, Mercedes Moné versus Layla Gray. Mercedes, in her backstage interview with Lexi Nair, was taking her loss to Red Velvet really well. Like, she's PWI's number one women's wrestler. There's not going to be any such thing as a downfall. And someone in the crowd had a great 12 is still a lot of belts sign. I loved her titles all being lined up on a little dollar sign shaped table on the stage. An angry jump right at the bell, desperate to make a point and impression. Not that there's anything wrong or that Monet's gotten to it all or anything. Poor Christopher Daniels ate a meteora off the apron in her opening fury. Gray was able to capitalize off of that for a tad, but after the break, a running knee to the corner had her walking all wrong. Immediately snapped into the statement submission and won. And what a night for Daniels. A kick to the dick after the match and Mercedes raised her title proud. Snatched Shivani's headset, still the greatest TBS champion of all time. She's not gotten to though. She's not gotten to. I didn't have time, unfortunately, to watch the Red Velvet and Mercedes Moné match, but I've heard very, very good things. So if you do want to check that out as well. I guess if I'm giving you a recommendation outside of the T2, that's the match. And the AEW National Championship, Ricochet versus Ace Austin. Gotta rack up some wins for the dickhead before he eventually battles with Bobby. Why not have it be a match that banged the first time? Flippy Richard and Athletic Ace once again gelled amazingly together. After the break, Ricochet's corner dropkick had him land right on his head, creating a weak point for Austin to zone in on. A challenger flow that served as a completely ineffective Leona who hilariously tried to grab Ace from ringside and missed every time like a Home Alone villain. Austin got a damn lengthy run too. Ricochet kicked out of it all and only just survived by putting the ref in the way of the flow. Then used him again to snap with a spirit gun before hitting it proper for the win. Then another reason for Austin to be the challenger was revealed as FTR jumped him to send a message to their challengers. The jump completely backfired and ended up by just giving the opportunity for Juice and Gunn to get one over on the champions and then touch their belts. So like, oh, a setup and a payoff. Yay. It was weird. In the segment itself, I was like, oh, this has got a strange flow to it, but I'm going to roll with it. And then when this happened here, I was like, oh, okay. I'm a bit better with it. Could have been written better. Or just could have had a better flow the segment itself. But you know, it was a setup and it paid off. I'm just happy to see that in my wrestling. The Bang Bang Boys picked the belts up and threw them out to the champions who stood all angry at ringside, all grumpy, bumpy, oh, we're going to get you. And they probably are. I'm assuming just flowing into Edge and Christian at some point. But this was a segment that I felt like was very much needed because the jabber segment between FTR and the Bang Bang Gang didn't really work for me, but this did. I felt like this was a really strong way to send us in. Anyway, the real thing that decided at the end whether or not I enjoyed the shows is the C2 matches, and every single one was great this week, all six of them. I wasn't high on all of them last week, but this week, yeah, all of them are great. John Moxley Takeshita, probably the best, but because I enjoyed all of them for different reasons. Just watch them all. Just watch this tournament. Great week for the tournament. But anyway, what do you think? This will roll on to next week as well. I'll talk about continuation of the C2 as we get closer towards World's End. And we've got Winter is coming. Well, coming. They'll be arriving soon. Got that happening. I've already said that the week of Christmas, I won't be covering the Christmas Dynamite, but I will be doing the pay-per-view. So you still get a show on, you'll still get like a show on the Monday, but it won't be talking about Dynamite. I'll just go straight into the pay-per-view. So it might be shorter for my normal pay-per-view stuff. So anyway, what did you make of this week of the C2? Was it just me having a good week, or was it genuinely as strong as I perceived it to be? Do let me know on the Discords and whatever. I say whatever. I'm on Blue Sky. Well, it's linked in the description, but I don't really post. If you hit me up, I will respond, but I really don't post enough on Blue Sky. But anyways, thank you for engaging, liking in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk more about the C2. With that, I bid you adieu. Ta-ra, duckies. Ta-ra.